Hello.
Okay.
Yes. Are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, you sound really low.
No, I sound low.
Oh, you know what? Let me put you on. No. It's my fault.
Okay. Yeah, I just put the phone down. I can take my jacket off. I'm too warm. Just a second.
Bob Dobbs is too warm. He takes his jacket off just like me and you. That was actual audio of Bob Dobbs taking his jacket off. Live.
Did you say?
I was telling the future listeners that was actual audio of Bob taking his jacket off.
you heard that? I spit up. I expectorated.
You did. You were retro mingent.
You know, I'm glad we're doing tonight. We get a chance to... We're going into a heavy weekend, April 22nd. I got to go away, so best we do it now. I won't be here this weekend.
Top secret, I hope.
You better fucking go, man. Your ass on the line, and I'm going to have to fucking fix it.
Well, you can't find me, so that's good.
No, you. I'm talking to the audience, not you. I said you, people. Your ass is on the line.
Yeah, we're
Bob is going into lockdown mode.
April 22nd.
Yeah, let me get you into the mood.
I'm in the mood. Yeah. Bob is about to get us into the mood.
I got an email tonight.
Good time.
It's 14:22, 11:22, 11, and it's that's 10 book after 10 tonight, right?
Mm-hmm.
It says, y'all, let's do a public list that I'm on. Mm-hmm. Y'all, why am I much, and he has in brackets, okay, so much, so why am I much more, so why am I much, okay, so much more creeped out about Bob after Virginia Tech? He says, the only man alive, and that's capitalized, the only man alive doesn't seem quite so funny anymore. And then he says, funny, F-U-N-N-Y, capital letters, exclamation mark. Then he signs, really, so.
Let me just put a cap on what you just said. Bob is on the cover of this month's Paranoia magazine with the headline, the only man alive, and that emailer was referring to that article in which you guys should pick up. Bob goes through his five-bodied schema, talks a little bit about the chart, and also his work with McLuhan. And is that a good little wrap-up of that article, Bob? Or
yeah, that's very good. And there's more to be on the web, ParanoiaMagazine.com website in 4 months. Once the magazine's off the stands, then they'll put the full interview in, plus new stuff will be added.
So why do you think he was creeped out by it?
I guess the idea that if you're the only one alive, you killed everybody else off. Or could it be someone who survived the massacre? Who survived it? The only one who survived must have been the actual shooter. And Cho was the patsy, you know.
Well, now Cho, he was in a dorm room that had a connection numerically. We were talking about this earlier, correct?
Right. I saw the news last night. That would have been Wednesday night, April 18th. And they kept showing the dorm hall or corridor, or it was where he went and killed people. I think it was where he lived. You know, they were showing his dorm corridor, and all the rooms were, there were 122, 211, 212, 2 this, 22 that, variation of the 22.
Lots of variations on the 22 and 21 and 11 and...
Yeah, as we go into April 22nd.
As we approach April 22nd, which historically in and around this time has always been crazy days for us.
Leading into April 22nd, you have April 19th. Oh, just a minute. I have to say something to somebody. Tomorrow afternoon. Okay, it's giving code to someone.
Was that Prince? Was that Prince Charles?
No. He's in jail. He's been arrested. April 19th, 1993 was Waco. April 19th, 95 was the Oklahoma City bombing.
Okay, David Koresh, and then we got Timothy McVeigh several years later. Okay.
And then April 22nd, 96 was the beginning of the Kosovo War, right?
Right.
And then...
And that started with a big massacre, yeah.
Right, on April 22nd. Mm-hmm. We're saying that the days, the numbers leading into the 22nd, like the 19th, is the point we're making here, the pattern. And then the next one was April 19th, 1999. April 19th, 99, going into the 20th, mm-hmm. was the carpet bombing in Sarajevo.
I think it was Serbia that morning, and then we had Columbine a couple hours later.
Right, so yeah. It was the 20th. April 20th, 99 is Columbine, and there was some major bombing in Yugoslavia within 24 hours of that.
Right.
And then we have April 16th, the recent this week, 2007, Virginia Tech. And some people call it VT. So V is the 22nd letter, and T is the 20th letter, which becomes 2. So 2 times 22 is 44, or 2 into 22 is 11. So you got 22 right in the initials. So we seem to have this pattern of April 22nd happening in the Magnetic City. On April 22nd, 92, Nelsenthal received the copies of Bob's Meteorology from the factory, arrived at his office in Toronto. So we had April 22nd, and then 7 years before that...
Now just put a little comfort factor on that so the audience knows what we're talking about. Bob's Meteorology is Bob's first official album release on the AK press circuit.
But it wasn't me. I was the content that people taped off the radio, but it was made by other people.
Right, and if you can get your hands on that, that's a rare item. I'm still looking for it myself. So
you can get it on eBay, can't you?
You can get it on eBay if it's there, if you luck out. Maybe I'll try to get a copy of it and distribute it if I can. But anyway, so that happens in 93.
92. 22nd, 92.
Uncanny.
And then 7 years before that, April 22nd, 1985, Nelsenthal started a newsletter, a pretty interesting newsletter with Bob Marshall, my colleague. And that was in... So the pattern of April 22nd showed up then in 85, 7 years later in 92, his next project materialized. And then that pattern of the week leading into the 22nd, including this week... where I got to go do something this week leading up to Sunday, the April 22nd, 2007, it seemed to be repeating since 92 all through the 90s.
And we're not going to say what it is you're going to do and what it is you're not going to do this week, but if you look at 85 to 90, 92, and how many years you have there in between
seven.
That, that's seven, and then you have 92 to the first event on your timeline, for leading up to April 20, which is Waco. So then you have, what is that, a four-year interval between Bob's Media Ecology. I'm left brain, Bob, so you have to help me with the numbers.
Oh, okay, I'll do it. So Waco happens a year after April 22nd, 92, and then 2 years after Waco is Oklahoma. But Oklahoma is 3 years after the 92 April 22nd when the albums show up at Nelson's desk. Then you have... 1 year later after that for Kosovo, and then 3 years after that in 99, which is 7 years after the Bob's Meteorology date in 92, which replays the 7 years from 85 to 92. And what happened is Goffey, who wrote the article on me in Paranoia Magazine, came out in the winter 2000 issue number 22. The story is issue number 44. Goffey was inspired by my efforts when he saw Matrix on April 19th, the night before call. And then he announced to his friend on the way to the movie that something weird might happen the next day because it was Hitler's birthday. We're doing this interview on Hitler's birthday, April 20th, right now. And so Columbine happened the next day. So Duffy was amazed at that, distracted and preoccupied by his prescience for 5 days. And then he got back and wrote the article from the April 25th to the 27th. And then found me, got in touch with me through Jerry Fialka and asked me to read it. And I was impressed with it.
So Hitler's birthday is on the 20th. But isn't there also some connection to his death day, the day that he supposedly executed himself? Or is that in May? Do we know what that date is?
I'm going to do it right now.
Okay.
Just wiki it. I think he died on the 30th.
Oh, he died on the 30th. Okay.
So let's just check that, though. Assuming that he tells the truth, some people complain about that, don't they?
It's really up. Nobody really knows. They haven't found his body, so we don't know if the man is dead or not, or if he.
He's dead.
He's dead. Okay.
He was born April 20th, 1889. Died April 30th, 1945.
Ladies and gentlemen, the word from Bob officially: Hitler is dead. So don't. I don't want to hear anything about that.
Oh yeah, no, he's dead.
Yeah.
And Bormann is dead too. Bormann died in trying to escape the bunker, and Stalin had Hitler's skull as an ashtray. Nobody knows that.
Stalin had Hitler's skull as an ashtray. You know, Stalin killed a lot of people.
That's right.
He might have killed more people than Hitler did.
Yep.
I know. I didn't know that about the skull thing. That actually brings a different light to Stalin. I knew him as his. He had his mother in a prison cell, and he would visit her sometimes. He put his mother in prison. Ever hear anything like that?
I didn't know about that. Is that true?
Yeah, that's something that's been spreading around. I mean, I've heard that from other people.
Okay, well, maybe he did. He probably was a monster.
Yeah, she was very disappointed in him, evidently.
I met Hitler, but I never met Stalin.
How was that?
I was very young when I met Hitler. I was 14, so all I know was the room was very cold.
Oh, did
you? I was chilled by something, but I didn't know what he was at that point.
Huh.
That was 1936, and my father had to go see him. It was during the Munich Olympics, and so I was in his presence, and then he sent my father and I down a couple floors to look at some movies while he finished his business before he met with my father. So I watched some, I don't know, Marlene Dietrich movies or something in Hitler's office building complex in 1936.
Wow. Was the room warm at first?
No, I'm saying when I was with him, I felt cold. I don't know what that was. It was probably just a young kid's intuition picking up there's something cold about this guy, you know?
Oh, okay.
The room may not have been warm, but may not have been cold, but I was cold or felt cold. I remember that.
I saw this independent film called Max, in which John Cusack plays a Jewish art dealer that befriends a young Hitler before Hitler is the Hitler that we know, and they have this like very poignant relationship. Did he seem like the kind of guy that before he started eating carpets from methamphetamines and the kinds
you're
of things?
You're asking me if he seemed like that?
Yeah, did he seem like he could have been a nice guy at one point? Or
No. I'm just a kid, and I see this man, and I probably picked up something pretty negative about him, and so it translated into me as being chilled.
That's probably.
You know, I'd say it was an authority figure.
Yeah, that's a good explanation. I buy it.
Yeah, a frightening authority figure, though he was pleasant. The ripples of feeling, I remember, is cold. I mean, that's what I remember. That's what's still
Can we call that rippling psychic resonance?
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
It's like going to the principal's office or something when you're a kid in school, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You can get a little chilled if you're guilty or if you're afraid. I had no reason to be afraid.
Yeah, we all do. But, we all get afraid of authority figures when we're kids. Until
yeah,
we,
but
yeah.
This was kind of, didn't have to be that. I'd met many other people through my father, so didn't have to be that way with him. It wasn't with these other people, so that's what I remember. He probably did have a bad vibe.
Yeah, he created some sort of resonance field, and, you know, that April, maybe there's a connection, or is are we talking 22s now? And
No, it's interesting that all this intense stuff happens leading up to Hitler's birthday, or the week of Hitler's birthday, April 20th. Maybe there's something going on there.
There are a lot of massacres, a lot of deaths and burning and suffering and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's like the energy he brought in on that day, April 20th.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Norman Mailer's new book is all about this, and it's a very interesting book. What's it, The Castle in the Forest.
A little Norman Mailer shout-out there.
Yeah, and I heard on YouTube, I was looking at some McLuhan stuff. Did you see that McLuhan stuff I sent you?
Yeah, it was great. I'm addicted to it. I'm. You know what, Bob? I did a little short film today. I'll be honest. I was so inspired. And
The guy who did it is pretty amazing what he's done.
Oh, it was great.
He takes really good quotes. His name is Mike Lewin.
Uh-huh.
Mike Lewin. And he put some nice imagery to these excerpts of McLuhan. So I emailed him and said, hey, I dig your work. And might have said something else. And I got an email back from him. He says, oh, I'm honored, Bob, coming from you. So he kind of knew about me, and then I found he did one where I'm used in it.
Which one was that?
I didn't send it to you. It's called Linear Tactility. I'll send it to you.
Oh, Linear Tactility, yeah.
The audience participation is part of the TV medium.
Hold on a second.
It isn't a participation.
Okay, while you do that, I just got to do something, all right? Just a second.
I'm going to play a clip from that show right now.
Okay, good.
And you're going to stay on the line, right?
Yeah, I just got to go. I got to do something in the other room, but I'll be listening. So, did you get Linear Tactility?
Yeah, I'm playing it right now.
Great.
Okay.
Yeah, the remember TV goes right into the human nervous system. It goes right into the midriff.
Yeah.
The image pours right off that tube into the nerves. It's an inner trip. The TV viewer is stoned. Yeah. It's addictive, like your show.
Yeah.
There's a strange expression, you know, you're taking me off, you're putting me on.
And they both mean the same thing.
They both mean the same thing.
Yeah. How can they be the same thing and be opposite?
Baudelaire put it in that famous phrase of his, hypocrite lectermos en blanc mon frère. Hypocrite, the hypocrite is a man who wears a mask, puts on a mask. Mm-hmm. And Baudelaire said, the reader is putting on my poetry and I'm putting on the reader. And it's putting on and taking off. It's consuming and producing simultaneously. It's their reciprocal relationships. But it's fun and games. This is the important thing. It is a process in which you play. TV demands play. Hence dialogue and interplay. It's not a solitary monologue medium, and that's why people with a merely private image have difficulty relating to it. But in putting on the public, which is a corporate act of play and participation, it's very difficult for a very well-defined private image to get with it. Mm-hmm. And it's a difficult thing to put on a public until you're prepared to play, as you are doing with your mask.
A mask.
You're putting on a mask, which is corporate and role-playing. It's not a private goal. You see, when you put on a mask, you're no longer seeking a private goal. It's if you put on a little masquerade mask like this, it means you're prepared to play fun and games.
Now, we just heard Marshall McLuhan probe.
Keep it going, then you hear me.
Okay. Just want to do a little ID here and make sure you're still there. Good, you're still there. Can you hear me?
Yeah. It seems to be blocking out. Is it going through clear on the computer?
Oh, yeah, it's coming. I mean, can you hear it a little bit, or?
Yeah, I hear just a little bit. It's kind of vague.
No, it's going straight into the computer. So
the broadcast.
Yeah, it's going into the broadcast. I want
to continue it to hear my part.
Okay.
And it's corporate and festive. De Gaulle was a superb TV image because he didn't have a private face, he just was a cartoon.
That's right.
A cartoon is tactile, and TV is not a visual medium, it is tactile. That's why whiskers are very good on TV. They're friendly to the sense of touch. Mr. Hertz's instrument with the resonant interval is profoundly good TV because TV is an audio tactile mode which demands that resonant interval, touch. So when I saw your fingers dancing up and down on that trumpet, I realized that you had a complete natural relation to the TV medium because of this interval of resonance, which is the TV form. TV is not a pictorial medium at all. It is a medium of audio tactile resonance.
Okay, let me get back and check here. Okay, tactile resonance. It is a medium of tactile resonance.
Yep, the dots. Pulsating dots rub against you and inside you. Anyways, this is linear tactility. That's the one I'm on, but it's McLuhan first, right?
It's McLuhan first. That's what we just heard, yeah.
But there's still more to come.
Oh, no. Well, there's other links. Let me see.
Oh, wait. Didn't you do linear tactility? That's the name of it.
Let's actually do linear tactility. I did the first link you sent me.
Yeah, the linear tactility begins with a stripper. You're looking at her bottom as she goes up a ladder. That's the one I'm on. But you're impressed with the guy's collection of imagery, right?
Oh, it's awesome. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Here's linear tactility. Before I started, this idea of the resonant interval. The resonant interval. This interests me because the other day at the Genesis Peorage panel that I had the honor of sitting down next to you with to listen to, I think you mentioned the tactility as being an issue when it came down to pandrogynous relationships, because eventually there would be some sort of body conflict between an astral and what you call a chip body, or was that a chemical body?
Chemical body.
Okay, so this brings up this. I'm hearing the same words, basically tactility, tactile, linear tactility,
yeah.
And I'm seeing a connection.
Well, that's McLuhan's main insight. It's very hard to get. Westerners find it really hard to perceive the resonant interval or what tactile or tactility is. And it's not a sense, it's the interplay of senses. It's the interplay, the pulsations. And if you perceive what tactility is, then you understand what Joyce was doing with Finnegan's Wake. There's even a phrase in Finnegan's Wake, tactile medium. It even has that in there. One little place. But the what I was saying to Jen and his partner was, I picked up, you want to look like each other, but not completely. So the actual process of cognition, our brains or perceptual apparatus, is we kind of merge with the what we're observing, but we also block it. We take in what the world is presenting to us, but we then distort it. Like, nobody can explain why the eyeball turns the world's image upside down. So it's something in humans that alters the environment, as well as the environment imposes its assumptions on us. That interplay, which is neither side of those poles, the gap or resonant interval between them is tactility. So the drama of cognition is this resonant interval. When you realize that television is an extension of that drama of cognition, then you understand what McLuhan's getting at.
I like the way when I asked you in person, you actually tapped your leg, and you said, "It's not the tapping; it's the fact that I can pull it away."
Right.
And
let go of what I'm touching.
Right, and that's really what McLuhan was talking about.
The space in between. Yeah. Now, if we think of the organ or apparatus in the brain that organizes the sensory input. The hearing, what comes in through the eyes, the ears, the mouth, smell, those senses, something takes those individual inputs and makes a coherent consciousness.
Right.
So the thing that would make that coherent consciousness could not identify with any one of the particular senses, could not get stuck to it, right?
Right.
So we call the thing that organizes the sensory data into a coherent consciousness, or what you experience, as the tactile organ. And it's not a sense. It's the interplay of the senses. And it touches the senses and puts them in position. I'm just, you know, making this up in a sense. I mean, I don't know what the brain does, but
when it's approximate, common sense. Yeah.
It's just taking the data and making it coherent, and therefore the thing that does that is not stuck to any particular sense. But the thing that's doing that is a kind of sense in itself.
It's not bound to the senses.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's like when you touch something, it goes. So it touches the data that comes in from the eye, positions it. This is all done, you know, at super speed. Touches the data that comes in from the ear, interplays that with the eye, plus the kinetic pressure and the smell, and it's like a drummer interplaying the different musicians' instrumental input and keeping a coherent resonance going through it.
The Urantia has a word for that. It's called a thought adjuster.
Who has that?
The book, the Urantia.
Oh, you know about that book. Okay.
And there's a term, God exists. Urantians believe that God exists. And they go on further to say that God is in each and every one of us as a thought adjuster, not as a actual presence. So that we all get a germ that we catch from our first moral decision. And that decision that we make determines that thought adjuster's existence. So
that's good.
Yeah.
Now, I can accept that. If you try to get precise about what those words mean or what my words mean, it won't work. But the interesting thing about consciousness is that we could not explain it exactly, because that would be limited to the verbal medium. And so when the Zen guys say you can't see the thing that does the seeing, you can't hear the thing that does the hearing, they're talking about tactility. So all of our explanations and knowledge or neurophysiology, whatever, are not going to describe that, the actual thing. And so thought adjuster, in the few sentences you said there, I could agree with those words, knowing that they're limited, but they're getting at some point that makes sense and resonates with what I thought I meant by tactility.
And with that said, I guess I'll play a clip from Linear Tactility.
Yeah, let's hear that.
Okay, here we go. Now, you won't hear it at first, but it'll come in for you in a second.
Okay.
All right.
I put you on as an audience. I wear you as my portal.
Do you think that this is an equal discussion?
It isn't.
You are equal to each one of us, or do you think...
I don't know.
You are equal to the whole group? Because it's mostly...
Well, are you, that's the striptease. Is a striptease equal to the whole group?
I don't use a signal crop. A discussion group like that.
Now, the stripteaser has to bear herself in order to put on her audience. And when she puts on her audience, she is a corporate power. When she steps off the stage, she is a private nobody. I put you on as an audience.
But you can see from the miniskirt, which is that the end is in sight.
He's the king of rock and roll! Iggy's the king of rock and roll, you fucking asshole! Sing it, Iggy! Sing it, man!
Now rock is rock, you give it a shot! Rock is rock, you like it or not!
Miniskirt is a costume worn by all tribal people, men and women alike. The miniskirt means the end of sex. Unisex has come. Until 1710, the word sex was never used once to mean allure. It was used to mean gender. We're back at that stage. Sex as allure has ended. Sex is now a technical term meaning male or female.
Do you miss doing it with me? I miss you too. You're so cute. I don't have time for a boyfriend or anything.
Thanks to overdoing it, I wrote this in Playboy some months ago.
Well, we should do
the reversal of the overheated medium. When we step up sex a bit, why,
what?
It ceases to be sex. It just becomes what it is for all tribal people, a man. Like coffee to us. Very casual. Sex as an exciting, enthralling, alluring thing is finished. And the miniskirt is shouting that out very loud.
We're just having a good time.
Well, then don't keep them all to yourself. It's antisocial.
Are moving information at speeds that the planet cannot cope with.
This is going to happen.
This is really going to happen. The key word here is organization. It's all about being professional.
We're not even on the planet. We're not even in the galaxy. We're somewhere else. So therefore, there's no nations. And there's no worlds, there's no corporations, and there's...
And when she puts on her audience, she is a corporate power. When she steps off the stage, she is a private nobody.
It's very little nature. As categories. As categories. When Ben Franklin started the United States, it was based on the newspaper, and the Bible, and books.
Yeah.
That was a real environment.
The United States...
It was a hidden environment that was having effects on people, inspiring people with new notions and getting away from the European medieval constructs based on the manuscript culture.
The only country in the world that began with the latest technology.
But then the United States had to confront the telegraph environment less than 100 years later. That created the American Civil War, because whenever you bring in a new technological communication environment, it will cause an identity crisis of the identity based on previous media of communication.
I don't know, it's such a mystery. Bob Dobbs was saying something weird. There's actually I can't read it that fast, but the visual accompaniment to what we're hearing right now seems to be an I am conversation.
Yeah. It says something discarded or something? The word discarded there? Yeah, you have to read it. You gotta stop it and read it.
No reason we shouldn't have some linear tactility with this combination.
Oh, you know what he starts showing?
What's
he shows an excerpt from my second Paranoia magazine interview with Guffey. Came out a couple of years ago, and he quotes. This is what's really interesting. When I saw that, I said, "This guy knows me." Might even be somebody on 5body.com because he takes the quote where I talk about Rai, which is a very esoteric notion. Have you got to that part yet where he shows the transcript?
I'll actually read that part to our audience. I have it right here. Bob Dobbs. I don't know. It's such a mystery. Something weird happened in the late 60s, but I think that's because we had a singularity with Rai turned to essence. And then in parentheses, I.E., not Rai, disappeared from this plane of existence. End parentheses. And we don't know what the fuck happened. Know what I mean? That's what you say.
Yeah, and then, is there any more? Is that about it?
Well, let's see. Now there's a picture. Okay. Now it looks like RG is responding back to you. I don't know if
that
is. Right, so it's possible that your original bodies are not, he's saying.
Yeah, that's Guffey.
Yeah, I'm missing the point of the I am, but that's funny that he puts that. That shows that there's some communication. He's actually referring to, I like that. It's kind of how I'm reading it and recording myself reading it but there's some degree of pulling back and going back in with this podcast in terms of I have access to the video on the internet and you're sort of on the phone and we can get information and it's not necessarily constrained to this.
That's right. You got to see a video you hadn't seen before with me the first time.
Right, and that's important. Yeah. That's an important moment.
Yeah, we brought in new input, and then this you're interviewing me, sort of. We're having a dialogue, and then it has a quote about Rai in the video. I forgot about that. That's what you were saying. I heard you come back after I spoke, and then you said something about mystery. You were reading that, weren't you?
Yeah.
I didn't recognize that right away. Then I told you to look at something, and I thought you would see this thing, and then you had already been reading it. Then you read it to us clearly.
That was definitely, he definitely took some choice Bob Dobbs sound bites.
If people, not many people know about that interview because you have to go to the Paranoia site. It was never put in the magazine. It's only on their site. So that's why I wrote back to the guy. He wrote back, I'm honored. Coming from you, I'm honored. So he had some kind of respect for me. So I wrote back, I really enjoy the quotations that you select. He has a lot of good ones. The one, McCoon Tom of Finning His Wake, is a really good one. And I said, I didn't say this, but I was meaning, you're knowledgeable. You've listened to tapes of McCoon, wherever he got them, they might be on the net, and you've picked good quotes, good sections to make your imagery around. So I complimented him on that. And then I said, have we met in any manner? In any manner or form, have we met before? And he hasn't answered that yet.
He's from, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, Rete. It's in Canada.
You can find out where he's from?
Yeah, his hometown is Ether.
E-T-H-E-R?
Yes, from Canada.
Doesn't say what province.
Rete. R-E-H-T-E.
Don't know that. What was interesting, not him, there's some people have been making little collages responding to him. Did you notice that? When you go to YouTube and then you put up
ones
by this guy, there'll be other ones on the side that come up, right?
Yeah, those are all his, yeah.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of his, but there's other people making. And one of them took a performance at the Marsh McLuhan Catholic Secondary School in Toronto.
Mm.
It says McLuhan CSS, something like that. And it's not him, but at first when I watched it, I thought it was him, so I said, oh, this guy's a Toronto guy. But then I realized it was someone else, could be him at another name, but he's not necessarily in Toronto.
Right.
But there, I detected that he must be Canadian. And so that you've confirmed it.
Now, why are the Canadians connected so much to the words you say? Is it something that they have that the Americans? Because the whole concept of media theory, you know, is hard for most of New Yorkers to grasp. You know,
that's right.
Yeah.
McLuhan, McLuhan is all that Canadians have. If you're an intellectual and reasonably perceptive about your time, you're going to come across McLuhan, and you're going to realize how fucking great McLuhan was, and you're going to be proud, if you're a Canadian, that he was a Canadian.
Right.
So he's the Canadian guy. He's the Mickey Mantle of Canada, of intellect.
In academic, yeah, whereas Michael J. Fox is a pretty good Canadian.
You got the entertainment guys like Dan Aykroyd, mm-hmm. those guys, Second City, and what's his name, Lorne Michaels, created Saturday Night Live. They're all Torontonians. Matter of fact, Dan Aykroyd, I met him a couple years ago, and he told me his parents were close friends of McLuhan.
Oh, no way. Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah, his parents, because he grew up around Toronto. I don't know if it was in Toronto, but in Ontario someplace. And so he said his parents knew McLuhan.
Yeah, Canadians are just better well-adjusted.
No, not necessarily. What McLuhan said is that that America is a culture that's creating all these environments and therefore is so involved in the effects of them, they can't see. They have no perspective on what they're doing because they're creating it all. And the Canadians, more
Interesting.
What?
Interesting.
Yeah, so with that background, we then are in the interval between Europe and the United States and the Soviet Union, back in the old days, and French, Europe and the French in Quebec, and then the native Canadians, what they call the first natives, I think they're called. McLuhan used to say that Canada was a borderline case. It was up against four-plus countries, four-plus cultures. But especially, it's looking at the United States. It's got a front-row seat, but it's not involved. Didn't have to go to Vietnam, right?
Right.
Boomer kids didn't have to go to Vietnam. So then they, some of them coddled the draft dodgers. So they got to be part of the American experience in a spectator role, but still very involved with it, at least the imagery of it. So Canadians are in a, what McLuhan called a philosophical relationship to American culture. They have a slight, if you think of philosophical as being a bit detached, we're a bit detached, yet we're the closest of any countries in the world, at least up till the 80s and 90s, so we were the most familiar. And what has become big in universities around the world is Canadian fiction, Margaret Atwood and those people.
Mm.
And my theory about this, McLuhan didn't comment on, is that because Canada is so close to the American experience, but not American, it has a unique take, a little detached, and more like what other cultures would experience. They have a detached relationship to America. And so Canadian literature of the 60s, 70s, and 80s resonates with the experience of everybody in the rest of the world. The Canadians are the best at it because they're right inside it, right beside it, you know, the American culture.
They're in the interval.
Yeah. And so that may be why Canadian Lit, called Can Lit, is big in universities all over the world. You may not know that in the United States, but it is in the rest of the world.
Did not know that Can Lit was big. I had heard that Chick Lit was big for a while.
Yeah, but that's here.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's probably big in Canada, but it Can Lit, you know. Is.
I saw a girl reading a Margaret Atwood book on the train the other day, as a matter of fact. I don't remember what book it was.
There. Prepared you for these statements.
Yeah.
So, what was it? McLuhan had this statement. He, in his book, Counterblast, came out in 69. He said, "Bless Expo 67 for presenting a Canadian cold front to the hotted-up American culture."
Hmm.
So he's playing off the fact Canada's cold compared to the States. But he's saying there's a cold front coming from Canada in relation to American mechanical involvement, which he called a hot culture.
Right. Canada's cooling us off in a silent way.
That's right.
Yeah.
And a lot of the comedy comes, media, sophisticated comedy comes out of Canada. Jim Carrey.
Right. Oh, Jim Carrey's Canadian. Didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. And all the Second City and Saturday Night Live comes from Canada. A lot of them. They all were trained in Chicago.
The best of them.
And then they hung out in Toronto at the Second City studio there in the 70s.
Look, I'm trying to get my girlfriend to move to Canada in a final blast of transformation. Don't worry.
And you want to go too?
It just seems like the place to be, Bob, you know? You just want to spend the rest of your life there. I don't know what you're doing in the city.
Well, I'm up there every now and then, you know.
You're back and forth. You're trilateral.
I have my cake and eat it too, you know. But that reminds me, did you ask your girlfriend, did you tell her about the whole Genesis thing? You told me you were going to. What'd she think of that if you did tell her?
We didn't really get into it.
Okay.
Yeah, I have to. I would have to actually have a conversation with her. I think I just mentioned.
You haven't done it yet.
No, there was an interaction. Pandrogyny is usually a one sentence conversation. I've tried to bring it up to a couple other of my friends. Very.
No, I'm talking about the synchronicity between me and Jin.
Oh, no, I've brought that up to no one. It's actually an interesting synchronicity, too, isn't it? That Jen's birthday is
February 22nd.
February 22nd, which is also your birthday.
No, my birthday is February 2nd.
February 2nd, okay.
He's 222, I'm 22.
He's the impression. Well, he's in an impression age, the age of Crowley, we said.
creepy about Bob being on the stands. The only man alive when somebody tried to be the only man alive.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the email.
At Virginia Tech. Mm-hmm. The other interesting thing, he had a question in there. So I was like, what is this, sir? And I said, well, you may not want to know, but if you want to know, go to fivebody.com. And I said, as for funny, it is not funny. I've never said it was funny being the only man alive. It is a kind of ecstasy, though. So that's what I said in response to that email. But if you go to Five Body, you will find one of the posters has been...
Fivebody.com.
Yeah, at fivebody.com. One of the posters, I'm not going to say his name, you got to read it and find it, has been on a rampage the past 8 months, or 6 months at least. He's a young person who insists that he has to go to Korea. Korea's where it's at. He's sick of New York, San Francisco, America, and the rest of the world. He wants to go to Korea.
Yeah, why not?
He's been on about this.
Yeah, right.
And meanwhile, he just recently went homeless. So he's posting his experiences, Portland, Oregon, and different places, about his homelessness as he's getting ready to go to Korea.
Uh-oh.
He tried to get girlfriends from Korea on the internet. I don't think they work. There was a couple he got, but I don't know what happened to him. I didn't read it in complete detail.
Getting girlfriends on the internet is an art form. You need to be taught it by a knowledgeable mentor.
Right. So this person, he thought he had a girlfriend in Wyoming, so he went to Wyoming, and it turned out she lied. She probably wasn't the age that she presented herself as. So he left there, and now he's in Portland, Oregon, floundering around homeless. But he's praying about getting to Korea. And so he presents himself. He threatens to kill me every now and then on the site, kill everybody else, you know. But I know the kid, so he's just playing. But the thing is that this whole Korean vibe,
yeah,
becoming a Korean, and then who becomes the new icon of Charlie Manson is a bloody Korean.
I know, it's not an era. We're done with that meme, right? That's over. So we got to move on to the Koreans. That's the next best enemy, it looks like.
Yeah, so this kid who was acting psychopathic on Five Body was channeling this Korean energy, and it showed up. I don't know if he realizes it yet. I don't know if he's posted anything about that.
Oh, that...
Oh, no, he did. He posted a bio of the guy today. He says, I like this guy. He's my new hero.
Yeah, you see? You see, the fact that the guy made a video is what's going to make impressions on the whole country, and that's why NBC released a statement today, if you read on the news, that they will not show the video anymore, because I think they woke up this morning, and they realized that they were releasing this kid's message.
Yeah, they were making the kid a communicating power.
Right.
And it doesn't matter what he wrote, it's like McClune's old joke. I love the way he nods. He really communicates. Well, this guy knew how to nod. He picked the right movement, the right medium. And it's like YouTube. And so I have a kid. He's reflecting the environment the kids are involved in right now. Back at everybody. And he's getting major coverage.
Major.
The perversion of the chip body sensibility of these kids is that, yeah, geez, they just want coverage.
He's getting more. He's
American Idol.
More than,
look at me.
More than American Idol. He's become American Idol.
Right. And so you're right. They woke up this morning and said, geez, this is ridiculous. Our effects are reversing. We're making him an icon of imitation.
Is it too late?
Yeah, it's too late.
The impressions have already got out there. I mean,
you
can go on the internet.
24 hours. And everybody else is taping it and playing it. It's all over. We're always too slow.
How about this? How about I play some audio that was actually recorded during the shootings in Virginia Tech?
Yeah, before you do that, what's interesting, when I first saw his name, Joe Sang-hui or something, I couldn't, I said, well, can I remember that? I didn't make an effort to remember it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I said, I'll get around to that. And then the next day, today I started noticing everybody calling him Joe.
Yeah.
And so I went and looked, I said, is that his first name or last name? And I don't even know, I mean, maybe they do it backwards. I don't know if Cho is his first name or last name. Don't know their...
We're back here now to our lead story tonight. The writing, the photos, the video received today here at NBC headquarters in New York. The same warning pertains about the sensitive nature of the following. Here is some more of what we received of video of Cho Sung-hui sent today to NBC.
You sadistic stars, I may be nothing but a piece of You have vandalized my heart, raped my soul, and torched my conscience. You thought it was one pathetic void life you were extinguishing. Thanks to you, I die, like Jesus Christ, to inspire generations of the weak and the defenseless people. Do you know what it feels like to be spit on your face and have trash shoved down your throat? Do you know what it feels like to dig your own grave? Do you know what it feels like to have your throat slashed from ear to ear? Do you know what it feels like to be torched alive? Do you know what it feels like to be humiliated and be impaled upon on a cross and left to bleed to death for your amusement? You have never felt a single ounce of pain your whole life. Did you want to inject as much misery in our lives as you can, just because you can? You had everything you wanted. Your Mercedes wasn't enough, you brats. Your golden necklaces weren't enough, you snobs. Your trust fund wasn't enough. Your vodka and cognac weren't enough. All your debaucheries weren't enough. Those weren't enough to fulfill your hedonistic needs. You had everything.
You hear the strong anti-rich people theme. This is the manifesto, by the way, and it goes on. There's a close-up of a knife. There are pictures of hollow point bullets, an almost artistic photo of them. Goes on like this for pages. I have yellow posted on here because he mentions martyrs like Eric and Dylan, the names of the Columbine gunmen. And then for pages and pages, it is just simply dense text. Pete Williams, still here with us in the studio. What do investigators look through this looking for now? What can they glean from this?
Well, one obvious thing is to consider whether anybody helped him take the pictures, and that's one thing they're going to look at. It may be hard for them to reach any conclusion.
Okay, I think we're not going to let the NBC casters take over here.
Right. Yeah. I didn't get to finish my point is that I heard today that they call him Cho. That's what everybody relied, you know, fell back on.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's his first name or last name, but Cho. So I'm looking at Cho. What's that? What's in that? Three letters anagram.
Mm-hmm.
The other one, Sung-hui, people probably couldn't remember. It wasn't as easy.
Mm-hmm.
So you got Ho and Cho, Canadian Ho. Ho Chi Minh.
Yeah, Ho Chi Minh, yeah.
Cho. Anyways, it's interesting to watch how that resonates or what one thinks about it as it becomes iconic. You know, Cho. Sirhan. Oswald, Manson, some of those serial killers, what were they? Terry somebody, or Ted Bundy, right?
Yep.
Bungie or whatever, and then now you got Cho. It's like Chinese, you know?
Yeah, he's the first first Chinese mass murderer. I mean, this is.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, in a free country, every ethnicity gets a chance at being a serial killer. And this was the Koreans' chance, and they should, there's a certain degree of, at least he didn't kill 40 people, at least he didn't kill 45 people. I mean, after all, that's how many Iraqis die in an hour, right? So,
right. But, there's the serial killers, European or North American, right? I don't know of any Asian.
No, this is that's what I'm saying. He's the first ethnic serial killer.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you want to call the Bin Ladens and the Muhammad Atta is the first ethnic serial killers. But this kid, was born and bred in United States. So he's actually our first authentic indigenous hyphenated ethnic serial killer, and that's a big deal. It's a big deal what they put out there. Here's his pictures. You could go on liveleak.com.
What they're shocked at is that you have a serial killer who is media savvy. They're calling it media savvy. This guy planned. He took the photos and a video. That's amazing. This is all premeditated. But that's natural for the media savvy kids.
They're wise to it. Yeah, second nature.
Yeah, second nature. So I wanted to go back to this. So we have this kid. I'm beginning to detect a xenocrony with me here. Not that I want to claim it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting, this whole psychotic play was going on Five Body the past 6 months. And you can go on there and read these incredible postings right now, tonight. Mm. It goes on. He's sitting there freezing in the rain. at his computer, so he just posts a diary on Five Body on his way to Korea. And he has no money, but he's going to get there somehow. He does a little porn. He did some porn in San Francisco a couple weeks ago.
What kind of porn did he do?
Gay porn. He said he blew a guy named Roy / Dan on some day a couple weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
So he got some money. But anyways, it's your average American kid wandering loose, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No visible means of support. Looking for a role, looking for identity. Knowing you can't have one anymore.
He's out of this world.
What?
He's out of this world.
Yeah, and he's also threatening to commit suicide and all this stuff. But we got this drama going on. They're on Five Bodied. And all this 22 stuff. And remember, I emphasize 122, which can become 14. 2 and 2 is 4, 122, then you put 1, and then the 2 and 2 is 4, so you get 14. All this 122, even in the zip code that Cho wrote to the NBC package, he got it wrong, emphasized the 122 by making an error. So, this guy who posted that it's a bit creepy about me, only man left, I'm hinting, you go over to Five Body, you'll get even more creeped out.
Well, where is it? I'm in Being Five Bodied. What is that? Where? Which discussion group is it under?
Under Being Five Bodied, you take any thread and look for Hex Body or Kiki.
Oh yeah, Kiki 888.
Yeah.
Hypothetical.
Oh, there's your 888. He once heard me say that 666 was the beast, but that Cosmic Warner said when we move past the beast, we'll be in the 888 zone. So I think that's what he's referring to.
This is, my girlfriend told me this. She said, when I was going through my doppelganger 8-bit versus 8-bit phase, she said, you know, the 8 is a very loopy number.
Loopy.
Yeah, and well, there was some story, some folklore to it about how it had no beginning and no ending, and those who wore it with a curse. And I don't exactly remember the story, but it's probably from ancient Europe or something. She teaches classical lit. So I'm looking at this guy's post, hypothetical suicide, and I just heard
one of his most recent posts. You might want to read it a bit.
It sounds like this guy is wearing the curse.
Yes. Yeah.
You know.
Oh yeah. He celebrates it.
He's got the 888 going on. Maybe he just needs to.
I don't think he thinks of it as a curse. He may, but he feels cursed and he celebrates it. Start reading what he wrote.
If...
What's the date?
The
most recent one.
April 16th. Well, actually, it's...
Yeah, go down to the 19th, what he posted today.
April 19th.
Yeah, let's see what he's doing today.
Oh, he's doing a lot, looks like.
Yeah, they're long.
Oh, God. Okay.
Yeah, just start reading a bit.
Current show... Okay, the post subject, I am so sad.
Yeah.
Current show, Mentallo and the Fixer. He lists the songs he's listening to, right?
Yeah.
Gary Newman, Seabound, Mark Nicholas, Information Society, Mindless Self-Indulgence, Solitary Experiments, Stromkern, that's the Perfect Sunrise DJ Dude edit, and Alice in Videoland song Emily.
April, so he lists those.
April 9th. He writes, and is still on today at April 19th. He presses enter twice. 10 days. A little bit ways down. The track I heard after the letdown, and the track I hear now before I make my way home tomorrow. Space, space, space. Portland is much cheaper and more informal to live in than San Francisco. Space. However, I find it strange that I am more depressed out in Portland. Enter. I would rather San Francisco beat the shit out of me right now. Period. New sentence, then have to bathe in Portland's cold rain anymore. Enter, lowercase, although I would like to go to film school in Portland someday. Enter link to Portland Film School. Northwest Film Center's Film School of the Arts, one of the largest community-based film art programs in the country, is the Northwest region's most comprehensive curriculum in media production and appreciation. Since its founding in 1972, the school has been known for its faculty... Okay, this is turning into a plug for the school, Bob.
Yeah, so go back to what he writes.
Okay, so that goes on for a while.
He
literally copies and pastes.
Yeah.
Okay. Enter. If I didn't end up fucking my life over beyond repair, period. Enter. New sentence. I could come back and open up a gay porn studio in Portland.
See how he's trying to find a role in life? He could go to film school, he could open a gay porn.
That's his options, huh? He's open-minded.
Yeah, that's his options.
Yeah.
That's where his skills are.
Wow.
Okay, carry on. Read a little more.
At least he's applying himself, right? No pun intended.
Yeah.
Enter. New sentence. I think that is what the city is missing. Referring to the gay porn studio in Portland. Enter. You know when high school dropouts come here and give hand jobs for meth and make the local green fascists proud of themselves for thrifty sex market shopping, period. I read that wrong. I don't know what he... Enter. Then it's about time I say kill the censors. Space. I'm so sick of the dirty looks I get when I tell people I'm in the pornography business. Enter. Portland is full of adult bookstores. Enter. And a woman is going to tell me about the exploitation of women? When I sell gay images?
He's typing this while freezing because he's homeless.
Enter. I'm exploiting the male. It's about time. We need to be exploited. Hey, tell it, you know, he's preaching to the converted, Bob, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
At least my studio would create necessary social anarchy to the eco-zoning of quote-unquote bohemian economics. Should I go on? This guy's a...
Well, you've had enough, it's up to you.
No, I mean, I'm liking it. He's definitely...
Yeah, carry on.
Portland has a visible gay scene. It sells porn. Enter. But to open up a studio that would be known outside the city borders would totally violate the green control cops' planning. Enter. A gay porn...
Yeah, he's against the green eco-fascists. The greenies, ecology movement.
Okay, is that a big... That's a big scene in Portland, because we ain't got any of them in Brooklyn, I'll tell you that.
Right.
It's pretty, you
know that it isn't big in Portland?
I don't know that. I haven't been there.
Yeah, he seems to be saying it is.
I live near the Gowanus toxic dump where the dead dolphin just came up. That came up right in my backyard, you know, that dead whale. So
yeah.
He says, a gay porn studio sounds very San Francisco. I remember Seattle had at least one well-known studio. Hard to get work in Seattle, but still more prominent than Portland. Enter all the way down below. So yeah, fuck it. Gay porn going into the green suburbs is super anarchic. I could flip that like a roll of coins. Get some property in Northwest Nevada. Do a tri-state bounce. California, Oregon, Nevada in quotes. Maybe get a Rosetta Stone Korean software. Maybe get a cracker to get a copy of the U.S. Army version. And then he lists a link to the U.S. Army... in Seoul, Korea.
Yeah, it's the Korea team.
And I'm going to that link, and my computer is going to blow up. No. My computer won't blow up. Okay. Korean proficiency test, Seoul National University. He wants us to take the test, he says. He says, take that test, too. Jump into some Tesoi courses in between. Knock on some doors. 3 years from now, I could be kicking it in Busan. I would probably be a vegetarian by then. And then, you know, just chill. I have to talk to myself like I think I have plans, or otherwise I'll get very depressed and I need a little motivation. So, that's in parentheses, by the way. Everything else is him rambling. So now we're back to the ramble, because that seemed to be him pulling us into some parenthetical reality of his.
He's going meta.
Right, he's going meta on us. Anyway, I was talking to a Brit last night. Parentheses, he got me high too. And he cheered me up a bit. We're totally laughing at the Australian who signed to Land Down Under by Men at Work. The guy who singed, I'm sorry, and that's the song, and I come from a land down under. Okay. So he's obviously onto this music thing, because he lists his music, he likes to listen to his music, so, and he's got the 8 on him, so there's probably a lot of, why is it so funny, he says, because they were playing the song all week at the karaoke. That's the Brit talking. And now he says the Brit has heard it many times before in his travels. The Australian was very jealous that the Brit traveled far more. Australians are famous for traveling, I might add. I've already known just 2 in my stay in Portland, plus the whole bizarre drug-inspired xenocrony when the Portland Trailblazers was like, in quotes, somebody hates Kiggy on Earth, but someone is smiling on him from heaven.
Kiggy be him.
End quote kind of feel. I noticed the fine balance between straight edge and druggy out here in Hawthorne.
You know what's great? The bums were on the railroads in the 30s. They didn't have a computer to listen to. They didn't even have a portable radio. But this kid's got all this media entertainment while he's poor and starving. That's a bit different way of being on the lam.
Right, the computer.
Yeah, he's got all that media. He can sit there. As long as he's got his computer, he can listen to this music and type messages and talk to the world. It's a different situation, isn't it? It shows you the chemical body can be devastated, and it was for the hobos in the 30s. That's all they had. But Kiki's got his chip body to play in while his chemical body suffers.
Yeah, well, his chemical body might be. Here he goes. I'm gonna skip a little bit. I'm just gonna.
And he's the only homeless guy in the world who uses the word Socrates.
He's a new brand.
Yeah.
You should be proud of him, Bob. He's your...
Yeah, I created him.
Your protege. Here, we have a... He says, I should smoke the last tiny bit of flakes I have left. Because he's still wasted. He says he hasn't smoked weed in 9 hours. Since I have $6 left in my pocket, I'm just going to stretch it out and bounce to a squat tonight. And then hitchhike or beg for money. That would not be there. I asked for $220 for my mother in less than a week's time.
This is 22.
Ah.
He means that. He knows about the 22.
I got high with it. Ate with it. Gourmet is not cheap. In short, I was completely irresponsible with my spending, just the way I like it. And, do you think I'll survive an overdose? That would suck, right? 26 Benadryls and vodka. And like I puke it out. And I have organ failure and end up a vegetable in bed. I so hope I don't puke it out. Leave a tiny note somewhere. Tiny note.
Yep.
Keep gay porn alive in ecotourism. I'm serious. I would start a Maoist cyberpunk gay porn action brigade.
Did he say Maoist?
Yes. To invade all the heavily visited eco-hipster hotspots of the world. Gay workers unite. Something like that. 4 Terrence, born on June 28th, 1957. The name is not spelled correctly. My father is younger than my mother. My father is the opposite of me, actually, in terms of stereotypes. He left home at 16, never came back. He worked manual labor most of his life. He had far more responsibilities. He goes on. I'm 24. I'm still asking for money from my mom. Okay, he thinks that's a bad thing. However, I would like to repeat that age relation thing again. It's not a bad idea, and I'm not feeling shame for it. So yeah, I am looking for a, in parentheses, let me check the ratio with my parents. I think that means he called his parents up. 1949, 113 Columbia, 1957, 628 USA.
So I was born in the USA. Colombia is his motherland, USA is his fatherland. Okay, the rest of this is expository. It's interesting. I don't know if it's interesting for our users because I'm just regurgitating what he's written here. But I think it's definitely an interesting character. You know, and good luck.
And he's also a hex body, so there's two names if you want to read the other guy if you ever go on there. The same guy, hex body and Kiki 888. But what's interesting here is you got a kid. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, Jack Kerouac, he had to travel around the world, across America, and write it on toilet paper, whatever, and then eventually get it published 10 years later, and that's all he got to read, what he wrote. This kid posts his stuff day in and day out, his diary, and people can see it. That's a whole different level of communication going on here.
One of the ways you can trap criminals in the United States is with total unoriginality.
Oops, I had a little YouTube playing there.
Okay.
For a second.
Did you hear what I said?
Total originality.
No, I didn't say that.
What'd you say?
I said it's... Maybe I did say it, but I don't mean it that way. I'm just saying it's an interesting new experience for someone who's homeless. Is that if they got a computer, they can engage with people. Maybe the hobos, they like being alone, didn't want to communicate. But you got the reverse here. The kid's communicating day in, day out.
I think he should be encouraged to be homeless, and then we can talk to him in 5 years, you know. At a certain point, we all go through a phase like this. I remember, you know, as a runaway myself, you know, you meet people, and I could imagine if I had my little T-Mobile Dash with me back then, I would be connected to the media world. But the difference here is that he seems to have willingly left by the grace of his parents to go on this quest.
No, no, no. He's been living off his mother for a few years, and he hates her, and they beat each other up, and he raped her in July down south. Yeah, he writes about that on the site.
What?
We pushed your envelope. We've now come to the danger zone.
He raped his mother.
Yeah, he talked about it.
Okay, so let's probe deeper.
Welcome to Dobbstown.
Let's read this.
Read what?
Where is this written?
You'd have to go way back. I don't know, it was a month ago or something. He was arguing with another person on there about it. And he'd refer to it. You'll never find it. You'd have to look. Let's not waste people. Trust me, it happened.
No. Let's get away from this guy for a second.
Let's go
back to the 20. Let's at least end with a synthesis of the numbers that we're working with here, which is 22. Tonight is April 20th. We're coming to the 22nd, approaching Hitler's anniversary, supposedly, of his birth and death.
No, we are. April 20th.
April 20th, so we actually are.
Yeah.
And all the psychic resonance that comes from sort of a figure like that around this time and causes massacres and such, the most recent being this Cho incident. And Cho has used the media to his own benefit and gotten his word out to millions of people. And, of course, you could see the entire video DVD online at liveleak.com, or you can email Bob or go to Five Body, and I'm sure somebody will post it.
What's interesting, last week it was Don Imus, and he got in trouble using the word ho, right?
Right, ho.
And so they put a C in front of it. The Hex Body has been, or Kiki, he's heading towards Canada. He wants to get into Canada. He's like you. He figures Canada's where to go.
Yeah.
So he's on his way, so he's got the C for Canada in front of Ho. Mm-hmm. So, and he's trying to be a Korean, so this Korean-Canadian Ho shows up named Cho.
Right.
And resonating with the Don Imus' Ho.
Yeah.
It's Finneganese. It's the language is commenting on itself and us as it... is erupts from us interaction. That's the poetic function. So look at how numbers in this. I mean, why did Fox keep showing these numbers repeatedly the other night. The dorm room numbers, you know?
There's some sort of association with the symbols that they...
Or it's the Android meme itself look,
yeah.
This is Bob's numbers. No!
Mm-hmm.
Bob's on the cover of Paranoia. The only man alive. Talks about 122 all the time. Go listen to him on Five Body. Look at this. Look at these numbers. We're going to show him again in 2 minutes. And then we're going to show him again. Between the talking heads and the videotapes.
Now, what if you just changed his name? Let's say a couple of days ago, somebody came up to him, like we interrupted the space-time continuum, and we went up to Cho and we said, "Hey, Cho, you're gonna freak out in 2 days, so let's officially change your name to, you know,
Kiki."
You think that he would? Kiki 888. You think he would just take off to a?
Now, what's your point here?
My point is, there's a scheme to the linguistics at play, meaning that would Cho, this Korean college student, or this a Korean American actually,
yeah,
it's incorrect to say Korean, would Cho have necessarily gone the route that he went on if the arrangement of his name was different? And then we get into an interesting linear tactility question on names, I think, right? Because you want to say, you know, my name.
Who gave you that num, as Joyce says in Finney's Wake? Who gave you that name? Who gave you that num?
Mm-hmm.
Just... I want to go on to another little parallel here, because we've got to end soon, but I want to say this. The conservatives say, the right, they say, Cho happened because of political correctness. The people were being too polite, let the kids express themselves, and didn't slap them down, right?
Right.
That the right blames political correctness. The liberals, the left, what do they blame? They blame guns. They want gun control. The counterculture says it was the Prozac he was on.
Mm-hmm.
Find out what drug he was on.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting. I heard a couple of psychiatrists, people talk about it, but nobody knows whether he was. They seem to not know whether he had any counseling and had any drugs. Have you seen any? Has any that question been answered?
No. Everybody's denying it.
Oh, has it come up?
Well, the college said that they had no written paperwork on this kid ever going to any sort of therapy, and that whole myth.
So on the surface, there's no evidence he was on Prozac or something.
Nothing.
Okay, that's interesting. So anyway, the counterculture says he probably was on drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Baudrillard, in his latest book, last book, Art of the Intelligence of Evil, would say that this kind of terrorist activity is inevitable under the globalized culture. You don't need to, we won't go into it, but he has a very profound explanation of the popping up of these human viruses and terrorists and AIDS diseases. It's just that our universalized global hegemony, the good dominates so much that the principle of evil will burst up at some point inevitably.
Mm-hmm.
Like he said, that's what September 11th was.
Mm-hmm.
It says an event will happen. An event, capital E. So let's call Baudrillard representing the anarchists. So the anarchists say, blame it on the principle of evil, the intelligence of evil. Right?
Right.
What does Bob say? I say you got to juggle all four. You want to be a healthy Kiki kid out there celebrating your xenocrony, and Kiki knows this. The interesting thing about Kiki, he's the only one on the list who knows my chart, uses the terms, talks about it, prods the others to enter the dialogue. They don't even know what he's talking about. But he's the most well-versed on my chart, as you just noticed that little bit. Tiny notes, xenocrony, threw the words in there.
Yep.
And he's always throwing in death threats. He's threatening to come to New York and kill me. So I got my own Cho right there on my own website.
And his name is Kiki 888,
that's not his real name. I met him.
Mm-hmm.
I walked him through the Met in February 2003.
Oh.
He was a young kid. He was born in 83, so he was 20 then.
Mm-hmm.
And he was contemplating joining the army. It was a month before the Iraq War started. And I think he went up there and signed in, but he got rejected for some reason, health or whatever. Too skinny, weak. I don't know, I can't remember, but luckily he didn't get drafted, or didn't get accepted. So then he went out to Seattle with his mother, and that's where he became a hustler, gay hustler.
Mm.
But now, why did I bring this up? So I met him, and then he went, I encouraged him to join the LaRouche organization, because after Seattle, he said, I've got too much scattered brain, too many drugs, too much, you know, profligate lifestyle. I want to get more purposeful. I said, go join the LaRouche cult, exercise your left hemisphere, get disciplined for a while. So he did that. So the next time I saw him was summer of 2004 at the corner of Lexington and 86. He was at a LaRouche literature table. So we talked a bit there. And those are the only two times I've been in his presence, but I've talked to him on the phone occasionally, every now and then.
Oh, he's a LaRouchean.
Yeah, temporary. Now, then he left them. He couldn't take it.
Oh, okay. He couldn't take it.
Yeah. And they got suspicious because I think he started talking about me to a guy who knew me in the LaRouche organization. So that guy got a bit suspicious of Kiki. And so anyways, it's very, I would say his posts, if you knew some of this stuff, are very interesting. You're watching a young kid trying to go through my chart, go through quadrophenia.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's aware of it, and he gets mad about it, you know, and threatens to kill me. I ruined his life. Other times he says, Bob's the only one who knows what's going on, you know, it's all over the place. So I bring this up because that's the only way to survive mentally today. You shouldn't make a decision. You shouldn't be a conservative or liberal or an anarchist or a counterculture. Be all four, depending on who you're with. And know that it's only one quarter of the story. What caused Joe? All four of those things. Plus whatever, right? Whatever's molding the present.
All four of those things. Yeah.
As McLuhan says, under tribal conditions, everything affects everything. So that's primitive acoustic space awareness. Now we have the Android meme miming everything that we ever made, created. So the Android meme lives in this quadriphrenic situation. So we have to be real yogic in relating our quadriphenia in relation to the Android meme's mirroring of it back to us.
Because
so that's my message to the podcast.
Media yoga.
Media, paramedia yoga, because there's no media anymore. It's all a seamless web, so paramedia.
Paramedia yoga.
Yeah, if you mispronounce it, it'd be parameta.
Parameta.
Yoga.
How about resident meta? How's that?
Parapresidents.
Parapresidents.
Yeah, parapresident yoga. I like that. Not resident, president.
Hey Bob, this is a good time to put on some Genesis Key Orage in Psychic TV and sort of end the interview. I think we've been going an hour 30 here.
Okay, we've entertained our useless viewers.
Our useless listeners, rather. Don't underestimate them, okay? Who knows who they'll be? Maybe it'll be a...
I know who they are, and I'm insulting them on purpose because I got to deal with them this weekend.
Oh.
I'm going out to save Kiki. I'm going to keep this monstrosity going another week.
Okay, Bob, I'll talk to you next week, I guess, huh?
Right, I'll let you know. So what's happening? I'll hang up that you're going to put on some Psychic TV or something.
Yeah, I'm going to put on some Psychic TV on the outro right here. You might be able to hear it. You want me to do that right now?
Yeah, but I just want to say this. I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to communicate to the world.
You're welcome. You're going to be on the podcast listing in a couple of days, and hopefully the world will listen.
Yeah, send me an URL.
I will.
Okay, so you're going to put the music on, and I can hang up if I want to.
Yes, the music is actually already on, and you can listen to it or you can hang up. It's up to you.
Okay, let me hear it, and I'll talk to you.
All right.
I wish I could save you somehow. told your story.